This week's Parasha Vayakhel deals with Moshe gathering the people to actually build the Mishkan. Up to now, we've been taught that we have to get ready for the building of the most incredible temple in the wilderness. The Jewish people will have it at the center of their encampment, and it will stay with them for 40 years and beyond. Moshe Rabbeinu is about to gather the people after the golden calf and tell them it's time to build the Mishkan. He's already told them what needs to be done, and now he's going to tell each person what they need to gather. Gold, silver, clothing, etc. But before he does it, he mentions Shabbat. And the question is, why? We're going to take a look into the parasha. We're going to see that Shabbat is important. There is a interesting episode when it comes to the princes and what they donate. There is an interesting episode finding out how did the people react when it came to donating. Did they turn away or did they gather towards it? And finally, we're going to look into the most incredible artifact that they had into the Mishkan, which was called the Kior, the lava that was made from the women's copper mirrors. Let's take a deeper look into Vayakhel. On the day following Yom Kippur, the day that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the second tablets, the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, Moshe assembled the entire Klal Yisrael and told them, work may be performed during the 6 weekdays. However, on the seventh, you must refrain from all labor. Moshe was telling them how important Shabbat was. No matter whether you are going to be building God's abode in this world, Shabbat is even more important. That is a lesson for life. If Shabbat is so important that it stops the work for God's temple, all the more so, it should be able and powerful to stop our work for ourselves. Moshe had to tell them this at the beginning, and in fact, a lot of laws are learned from this. You see, on Shabbat, Moshe explains, we're not allowed to light a fire. Lo tovaru esh. We're not allowed to light a fire, but there are 39 melachot, 39 categories of work that are forbidden on Shabbat. And we learn these 39 categories from the Mishkan. Whatever was used to make the Mishkan, for example, they needed to plant and they needed to sow and they needed to write certain things and they needed to cook and they needed to burn certain things and cut, etc. 39 different categories were used in the working of the Mishkan, and those 39 were forbidden on Shabbat, and therefore we know what is forbidden on Shabbat. Those are called the 39 melachot, or the tal, tet lamed, 39 categories of work. There's a famous story that's brought by the Kohelet Rabbah in chapter 9:3. The wicked Emperor Hadrian challenged once Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah, and he said, I am greater than your teacher Moshe. Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah was startled. What do you mean? He said, very simple, said Hadrian. I'm alive and he's dead. Don't your books say in Kohelet, better a living dog than a dead lion? At least he understood that he was a dog. Rabbi Hananiah told him, I will profess the truth of your words if you can fulfill one condition. Decree that your subjects, as a one-time rule, may not kindle any fire for 3 consecutive days. Hadrian said, there's nothing easier than that. I'm going to send out the troops. They're going to make sure we're going to enforce. 3 days, nobody is allowed to kindle a fire. That evening, they both went to the terrace and they looked over the entire town. And Rabbi Yeshua saw in the distance that there seemed to be some smoke rising from a chimney in a house. Didn't you prohibit kindling a fire? He asked the emperor. A messenger was quickly sent to the house, and he returned saying that actually a nobleman lived there, and his physician had ordered him to imbibe hot drinks to cure his cold. He had kindled the fire for that purpose. You see, said Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah to Hadrian, your subjects don't heed your orders even while you are alive. This man could have easily waited till the next day. A cold isn't life-threatening. Our great rabbi and teacher Moshe warned us 2,000 years ago, don't kindle a fire on Shabbat. And to this day, said Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananiah, no fire is kindled in any Jewish house on Shabbat. Isn't that incredible? See how the Jews kept Shabbat in that time. So the Torah continues with the gathering of everybody running to get what needed to be done for the Mishkan. But the question is, why did Hashem devote so many parshiot of the Torah to the subject of the Mishkan? We've already learned in Teruma and Tetzaveh what needs to be used in the Mishkan, including the Bigdei Kehuna, the clothes of the Kohanim. Then we had a little bit in Parsha Kitisa, and now in Vayakel and Pekudei, we are acting upon the command. The people are actually doing it. Why the repetition? We find parallel instances in the Torah, for example. Hashem repeats the name of Klal Yisrael 5 times in one pasuk. It says, Bnei Yisrael, in Bamidbar 8:19. Why? And similarly, we find when Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, went to find a wife for Avraham's son Yitzchak and eventually found Rivka, he repeats the entire episode of what happened, word for word seemingly, and he doesn't need to repeat the whole episode in the Torah. The Torah just needs to say Eliezer said what happened, but it goes through everything in detail again. Our rabbis tell us that the words of the servant of Avraham are dear to Hashem, therefore it is repeated. Similarly, Bnei Yisrael are dear to Hashem, and therefore the words are repeated. And similarly, the Mishkan is so dear to Hashem, it was the abode that the Jewish people would worship and feel godliness whenever they entered. And it was at the center of the camp. So even in their own homes, they would feel God's presence. Even when they went out of the Mishkan, it is so important. Therefore, it is repeated again and again. Moshe called an assembly and instructed the Bnei Yisrael to erect the Mishkan. Their gathering for the sake of heaven atoned for their previous unholy assembly in which they had demanded the Egel, the golden calf. When the people heard that God presence would reside in the Mishkan as a sign of forgiveness for the sin of the golden calf, they were very joyous and happy. The donations immediately began to flow in. They donated not only gold and silver, but even their personal jewelry. By doing this, they made amends for the guilt they incurred by having contributed ornaments to make the Egel. The women who had refused to give any of their jewelry for the golden calf were now the first to volunteer and donate all their jewelry to the Mishkan. In only 2 days, even more than a significant amount of supplies were brought. Yet the donations continued to pour in. The fundraisers paced up and down the camp, calling upon the people to stop giving. This was probably the first time and the only time that a fundraiser, no matter how much was pouring in, they had to tell people, stop giving, we have enough. The Bnei Yisrael, by contributing so overwhelmingly for the Mishkan, manifested their natural trait of generosity. In fact, a Jewish person can be defined by 3 things. They are compassionate, they are bashful, and they practice chesed, assisting others with charity and good deeds. Moshe announced that all God-fearing men and women were invited to assist by spinning and weaving the tapestries and by constructing parts for the walls of the Mishkan with their own hands. Both men and women responded. They labored and brought Moshe samples of their work. The speciality of the wise women was spinning the goat's hair for the tapestries. Since that hair was fine and stiff, it was tough, but their women were known to be experts at this. Whoever assisted in the construction of the Mishkan was endowed with a special wisdom from God. Not only were the people who helped build the Mishkan inspired with divine wisdom, but even the animals used for its construction were granted special senses. The domestic animals, which had to transport the beams, knew by themselves which route to take, and the wild beasts, whose hide was required for the tapestries, came to the Bnei Yisrael of their own accord. Both Bezalel and Ahaliav were inspired with divine understanding in order to enable them to fashion the vessels of the Mishkan exactly as God had commanded and to chisel even the most intricate designs. But, there is a but, it seems that the Torah says that Bezalel is given all the credit for the Pesukim reiterate constantly, and he made it, talking about Bezalel. Why? Because Bezalel exerted himself not only when it came to the physical construction, but his mind was put on a constant basis to understand the profound meaning behind each object. And he had kavanah, he had intent. Since he invested so much spiritual exertion in the building, he was rewarded by Hashem. Whenever a person builds, you can build physically, but what is in your mind at the time of building? Are you building the Shem Shamayim? Are you understanding what's going on? Bezalel knew how the creation of the heavens and earth worked. He understood what each artifact was meant for, and he put his thoughts, his mind, and his speech together in creating these artifacts, and hence the Mishkan goes after his name. The Nesi'im, the leaders of the tribes, heard that God wanted a Mishkan to be erected, and when they heard that, they said, you know what, we are happy to supply everything that you need, Moshe. But Moshe told them, no, God has commanded for everybody to give. When they heard that, they said, okay, let everyone give, and then we'll give whatever's remaining. They underestimated how amazing the Jewish people were. And by the time the Jews had finished giving, which they hadn't because they continued to give, there was nothing left for them to give. Therefore, the Torah omits the letter Yud from the word Nesi'im to spell Nasa'am, to indicate that they failed. Although they had good intentions, they were wrong to postpone the fulfillment of a mitzvah. When the Nesi'im saw that no more material was needed, they donated the precious gems for the Ephod and the Choshen. Later on, the Nesi'im were particularly eager, because they learned their lesson, and quick to offer the inauguration sacrifices in order to correct their mistake. The parasha finishes with a special donation by the ladies. The ladies brought their personal copper mirrors to be used as building materials. When Moshe saw these, he thought, you know, this isn't quite the thing that I can accept. These are tools, potentially, of the Yetzer Hara, of the evil inclination. The ladies are using this to dress up and to look good. God commanded Moshe and he said, do not despise the mirrors. It is because of these mirrors that the Bnei Yisrael multiplied in Egypt. The Jewish ladies had been looking into the mirrors. The Jewish people, the slaves, were very tired when they came back home from work, and they didn't really want to have children. And the women beautified themselves using these mirrors, and that enabled the continuation of the Jewish people. We see constantly in our parasha the ladies that were there to make the tapestries from the goat's hair, and the ladies that were there, the first to donate. And here they are bringing their mirrors because they use these mirrors in order to procreate and to build Am Yisrael. And Hashem said, I want these mirrors. In fact, these mirrors were used for the kiyor. The kiyor was the lava where the Kohanim would wash their hands and feet in order to purify themselves before they came to serve in the Mishkan. And that is an important message. In life, when we do things with God at the forefront, it doesn't matter. Even if it's a mirror, we can change that artifact and it can be used into something very, very spiritual. It's dear to God. A Jew can elevate something physical to something very spiritual just by their thoughts and their actions.